Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back to Nine Lives, Season 2, Episode 9. We're in my home today, which is very sweet. This is my little house, my little bungalow. If you can hear some strange noises, I have not been abducted by an alien. It is actually Cowboy who is napping in front of me. The sweet, sweet boy. He's the guest of today, and he doesn't have a lot to say because he's fast asleep. But I just got back from Zion National Park yesterday, hence why we're at home. Usually I record in the very swanky Spotify studios, but today we're just doing a little home episode. Feeling a little bit jet lagged, but sticking to my promises, getting an episode out every week for you lovely, lovely people. Yeah, running in Zion was certainly an adventure. Something I didn't take into consideration was the altitude and just how much running at elevation takes it out of you. So when I got there, I went out in the morning and ran just a little 5K just to shake off the jet lag. It's something I always do when I travel, is immediately try and get the blood flowing and get into a bit of a routine. And I started running and I could hardly breathe, and I was very taken aback by how slowly I was moving and how I just felt like I couldn't control my breathing. But then text my running coach, the lovely Finn, and he was like, yeah, mate, you're high up in the bloody mountains. Of course you can't breathe. There's hardly any oxygen there. So of course, you know, the days go on, whatever, I'm adjusting a wee bit to it. And then I ended up going to this race. I've got the medal here. I'll just show you all. It's probably the best medal I've ever had. Obviously, everything is bigger in America, including their medals. They put this around my neck and I damn nearly fell over. But it's very, very sweet. It means a lot to me, this one. But I did the race through the national park and obviously didn't take into consideration that with elevation means less oxygen. And I probably ran my slowest half marathon to date, but the most beautiful half marathon I've ever run. And I got overexcited as always and set out at the front of the pack with the, I think it was like 1:30 or 1:40 paces. And by about mile 3, I was out of breath, which, you know, for someone like me, I'm not used to being out of breath running. So I just slowed it right down. I put on my Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron playlist. And I just had a really lovely ride through the national park and, you know, just seeing these canyons open up in front of me. And there's a scene from the movie Spirit, which if you don't know, go and watch it. It's probably the most delightful cartoon you'll ever see. It's by DreamWorks. It's about a Mustang who is taken from his herd by a band of soldiers. And it's about his journey home, back to his homeland with this wonderful Native American who kind of represents freedom and, you know, liberation. And then these American soldiers are keeping him. And there's a lot of metaphors in it. But the main theme of the movie and the main scene that I remember, and I think a lot of other people of my generation remember, is him running through the canyon, or, well, actually him running through the meadow with the eagle above him. And it's just, like, when I was little, I remember watching that and just wanting to be Spirit so badly. And the monologue in it is, he says, "And so I grew from colt to stallion, racing with the wind, soaring with the eagle, flying. There were times I believed I could." And I still get goosebumps saying that. And it just, like, pans over him and he is just sprinting through this meadow, jumping, and like he just looks so happy and free. And then he joins his little herd and then the story begins. But I just remember when I was little, seeing that scene and wanting to be that. Whether it was I actually wanted to be a horse, or I just loved horses, or I loved the idea of total freedom and being in nature. And anyway, when I was very, very ill, at one point my psychiatrist asked me if I could visualize what I want my life to look like, or was there anything as a child that reminded me of happiness or anything? And that movie immediately came up for me in that therapy session, and that scene came up for me because it was sort of the antithesis of everything that I was going through in that present moment at my life, which was really not feeling like I had any freedom or any agency over myself or my body or physical fitness, whatever you want to call it. And I remember saying that if I could one day recreate that, I would love to do it. And so when I saw the Zion National Parks race being advertised, I took a chance and entered. and then, yeah, we flew to Utah and I did the race. And, you know, I think that meant a lot more to me than anyone will probably ever be able to understand, because I think it's been such a long journey and it's such a personal experience and it's such a visceral feeling to be able to have overcome that and go back to that place and see the scenery of the canyons, you know, see the meadows opening up in front of me, but in a way not just to visit but to run through that place is like a kind of testament to how far I've come. And I think it's a lovely exercise that we can all do, whether it's like specific inner child work, I don't really know, but I think everyone has that thing as a child that you remember so vividly loving. For a lot of people, it's like Disney. A lot of imagery that comes up for people when they do think of childhood and childhood films is animals running, freedom, playing, just like a wholesome, lovely, triumphant feeling of getting out there into the world and being brave and doing really cool things. And I think that running through Zion probably tops the bucket list for me. And yeah, it wasn't a fast race. I certainly wasn't PBing. There were no impressive splits. But I got up at 4 a.m. in the middle of Utah in the freezing cold. I went on my own, which I was terrified to do because I didn't know anyone there. You get dropped off on the side of a motorway. You go into a field. There's no one, you know, no one I knew. There's someone on a microphone. There's three fire pits and thousands of strangers. So for me, it was rather intimidating. And I, on the way there, nearly told Joe to stop and turn around a few times because it was so early and I was so jet lagged and I was so cold. And I just couldn't perceive running a race at that time. And anyway, got there. Jumped in headfirst, met three lovely listeners, and then four more on the race. Then when I got to the end of the race, the most gorgeous girls, Nine Lives listeners, had a sign for me saying Nine Lives on it and hashtag 444 and just had like my name. And that was like completely surreal to be in Utah and have meet some of you guys was like mad. So that was definitely just the whole trip was so wholesome and wonderful, and it was just lovely to slow down and appreciate where I was at instead of trying to constantly do something better. And I think we can all learn from that a little bit, that sometimes experiences don't have to be about, you know, getting a really fast time or being better than yesterday, being super disciplined. You know, it can just be about, this is something I want to do for myself, and it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It doesn't matter how fast I do it. It doesn't matter the time I do it in. It's just, this is my wacky, crazy idea that I want to go and do, and I'm going to live out that dream for myself. So Zion was incredible, and I loved Utah. The landscapes are incredible there. I also went to a real-life ranch, which I think might top the race, which I know sounds a little crazy, but I by chance met this cowboy there called Clay, and Clay took me under his wing for the day, which I didn't ask him to do. He just did. I don't know I told him I was quite experienced show jumper and that I'd grown up riding horses. And anyway, he just immediately was like, right, get on this super advanced reining pony and we'll see what you can do. I was like, oh my God, okay. I've only ever ridden English, but I'll try. And actually, I haven't ridden a horse or properly ridden a horse in a sense of technical riding or being in the saddle and trying to, you know, properly work with a horse since becoming fit and losing weight. So that was a really beautiful moment to feel how strong I am and how much more capable I am in the saddle. It felt like I was a little girl again, or at least maybe me when I was 12, peak of my sort of show jumping career. So that was amazing because the last time I tried to ride on a holiday, I was actually too heavy. That was very heartbreaking for me to not be able to join in on that. And anyway, so I went back and he put me on this incredible little horse called Mary Sue. And she was fast, proper, really incredible Western pony who's trained for barrel racing and reining. So they do all the kinds of acrobatics and you're steering with your legs and your feet instead of your hands. So obviously English riding is all about hand, you know, you're moving with the reins. This one, you're moving a lot with your body, a lot with your legs, your thighs and your feet. So big learning curve, but he showed me how to work with the horse first. And then immediately he just popped me on. He was like, right, on you get. So we were twirling around in circles. We were doing gallop to stops. We were doing backwards. And then we went out on a really long trail ride through what can only be described as the most beautiful place I've ever been, which was near Bryce Canyon National Park. So very snowy, very cold, open plains with mountains surrounding us. And it was just me, the cowboy, his daughter and her daughter. So like three generations of cowboys. And me. And I just, the whole ride was like fighting back tears because I just couldn't quite believe that I was like seeing what I was seeing and that I was riding a horse and that I'd just done a half marathon the day before and here I was. And I've worked so hard to be able to afford this trip and to, you know, give myself the life that that little me always wanted for myself. So it was a very gorgeous trip. And I hope that in your life, you get to experience moments like that as well. Because I think for a lot of people, maybe what we're sold as aspirational online really doesn't fill your soul the way it's meant to. And I think people get confused about that. You know, you get the shiny car, you have the looks, you buy the bag, you do whatever. But people often feel very empty after doing all of those things and getting all of those material belongings and ticking all the boxes of what it is to be successful. That really what you miss is that, like, if you separate your soul from your ego and you look into your soul and you ask, like, what is it that I want? What is it that I need to nourish myself with? What did I want as a little girl or a little boy? And, you know, how can I give myself a life that feels super fulfilling? That whole experience got me thinking about what it is that really nourishes our soul over what people think they might need in their lives. And I think after you've been sold the ideas that, you know, you need certain things to make you happy, when really, if you strip it back, like I said in episode number one or whatever it was, like sometimes you just really like a tree and that can make you very happy. And of course, you know, the voyage to Utah and getting on a horse is quite a big thing to do, but little everyday joys that you can find for yourself in similar ways will work very nicely and should build the momentum for yourself to have those big, big moments where maybe one day you will be running a half marathon somewhere that you've always dreamed of being. And I think that running is a beautiful way to explore the world. It's the body's natural way to explore the world and to explore yourself. And whenever I'm in a new place, the first thing I do in the morning is always go for a run and look around and explore. And I think it's a really beautiful thing. The last day, actually literally the day we flew home, I went in the morning to the East Rim and did a really long trail run. And I mean, just the scenes, it's like you're on Mars. I couldn't quite perceive what I was seeing while I was there. and being able to run through it and see it completely on foot was amazing. And to meet so many people who follow the podcast was amazing. I think really cool to see how big the listenership is in America. That's really crazy. So yeah, I'm just so happy that this is, you know, affecting change in so many people. And it's beautiful worldwide. We're a lovely community. And yeah, it's wonderful. So the marathon and Utah and the whole experience got me thinking a lot about change and chapters and, you know, the chapters of my life that I've been through and the momentum that it's built up to get to this place. And I wanted to read you a passage today from a book, because I think that you'll all really, really appreciate it. And it's from a book called Amankara, which is spiritual wisdom from the Celtic world. If you don't know, I am full Celtic. I'm half Irish, half Scottish. And this book I found when I was a teenager, and it's been with me ever since. It's a beautiful book and it's very, very digestible. So go pick it up if you haven't read it already. It's wonderful. This is Irish, but I'm going to read you a little passage from it. It's not very long, but it's called To Grow is to Change. In a poetics of growth, it is important to explore how possibility and change remain so faithful to us. They open us to new depths within. Their continual inner movement makes us aware of the eternity that hides behind the outer facade of our lives. Deep within every life, no matter how dull or ineffectual it may seem from the outside, there is something eternal happening. This is the secret way that change and possibility conspire with growth. John Henry Newman summed this up beautifully with the idea that to grow is to change, and to be perfect is to have changed often. Change, therefore, need not be threatening. It can, in fact, bring our lives to perfection. Perfection is not cold completion, neither is it avoidance of risk and danger in order to keep the soul pure or the conscience unclouded. When you are faithful to the risk and ambivalence of growth, you are engaging with your life. The soul loves risk. It is only through the door of risk that growth can enter. I adore that. And I think that that's something that all of us, perhaps we've lost a little bit in the modern world, is that, of course, please don't ever do anything unsafe, ever. But doing things that feel big and adventurous and taking risks in your life that are not going to impact your personal safety. I mean, that's to be alive, right? That's why people go bungee jumping. That's why people run marathons. That's why people enter Ironmans. Like, why are we doing this? It's because we're searching for risk. We're searching for risk and reward. Where danger is, the redemptive grows. Perfection is the fulfillment of a fully lived and inhabited life. Possibility and change become growth within the shape of time that we call a day. Days are where we live. This rhythm shapes our lives. Your life takes the form of each new day that is given to you. The wonderful Polish poet Tadzio Rozwadowski describes the difficulty of writing good poetry. A writer writes and writes and writes, and yet the harvest is so minimal. It is more difficult to spend a day well than it is to write a book. I love that. It is more difficult to spend a day well than it is to write a book. A day is precious because each day is essentially the microcosm of your whole life. Each new day offers possibilities and promises that were never seen before. To engage with honor the full possibility of your life is to engage in a worthy way the possibility of your new day. Each day is different. You may wish to change your life, you may be in therapy or religion, but your new vision remains merely talk until it enters the practice of your day.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Big thing. Don't just talk about it. Get out there and do it. I think this is a big thing that I notice a lot with people is you can listen to the podcasts, you can buy the journals, you can read the self-help books, you can watch all the running influencers you want, but until you open that door and you make those ideas part of your daily routine, change will not happen. Change doesn't happen by accident, but it happens at the possibility of each new day. I just thought that excerpt was beautiful because it seems unquantifiable if you're looking at what I've been through in the last 4 years and the person that I was then to now the shot of me running through Zion, let's say. That's a massive canyon, of change. And it seems like, how can you even begin to think about making that sort of life change? And it really is in each and every day. Every new day comes with a new possibility, and your day represents your life. And sometimes you'll have bad days where, you know, you feel unable to do anything at all. And some days you'll have days where you feel like you're a superhero, you're on top of the world, everything is flowing, you're running 10K, you're taking meetings, you're doing whatever, you know, it's all working. But every day you have a chance to try something new for yourself. And that's what I love the most about the seasons. It's what I love about sunsets and sunrises. Our world in nature represents rebirth constantly. We're constantly changing. We're constantly growing. You know, to change is to live, and everyone should change throughout their lives. To stay static and unflexible, you know, whatever it is, it will never serve you. We are meant to change as humans, but to go from spring to summer, autumn, winter, to go from day to night, with each sunrise, there is a new chance. And I think that's why I've become so resilient in making mistakes and trying new things, because I know that if I F it up, or if I make a really bad mistake, or if it doesn't work, I always have tomorrow to try again and try something new or try a different way of doing things. And it's in that kind of childlike joy and mistake making. Like, remember when we were kids, we used to fall over and graze our knees all the time and we wouldn't complain about it. We'd just get up and try and play with our friends again. Like, that's the kind of attitude you need to life. And knowing that every day resets and you have something new to offer is such a wonderful way of looking at it. And having that, I suppose, what would encapsulate hope, having that hope for change and hope for a new day is a really beautiful thing. And I just thought that passage was such a lovely way of tying how I've been feeling about things recently to what I wanted to speak about in this episode. So just know that change, even though it feels scary, is accessible to us all, even if it is just the daily practices that we put. And then one day, before you know it, you'll be looking back and you'll be like, oh my God, I'm running through Zion. How did this happen? And it's a really beautiful thing. And I think on the down days where you aren't feeling so great, knowing that every time there's a sunrise, that it just resets and you can try again is a wonderful way of looking at things. Recently for me, you know, I've had a tricky few months with, especially with running, I would say. Like, I don't think I've fallen out of love with it, but I think there's a certain part in a marathon block where it becomes a little bit of a chore. And I'll always say that even though I love marathons and I love races and I love getting the medals and all that stuff, I love running the most when it's just me and I'm on a trail and I'm on my own and it's a practice of meditation. I do find it quite a bit of a slog after a while, and we're now 4 weeks away from Paris Marathon, and I'm certainly feeling it in my body, feeling it in my mind, and feeling quite fatigued. But Zion was brilliant because it made me fall in love with it again, and it reminded me of what running does for me and where it takes me in the world, and the things that it shows me and what it means to me and what it means to you guys as well listening, because I know so many of you listen to this on your runs and you bring me with you, which is so beautiful. I just love it so much, the thought of us all out on our runs together or walks or at the gym, whatever it is you're doing. Joe also came with me to Zion, and I made a little video while I was out there that a lot of people resonated with, which was just a little video of us out on a hike We went to the Slot Canyons, which is one of the most beautiful places in Zion National Park in the world. And it got me thinking about how I'd swapped bars and busy clubs for hiking, quite literally. You know, my pastimes now are time in nature, exercise, time with animals. Like, those are things that I do. And I've kind of swapped that lifestyle of like busy clubs, busy bars. And while, of course, you can manage both, and I think some people have a beautiful balance that I am so jealous of, I wish I could do that too. I think it's always nice to remind yourself that, like, if you're someone who does not want to go to bars and clubs anymore and you prefer or you feel calmer when you're just in nature and you're just exploring the world that way, that's okay too. I think we're sort of told that there's one way to live life. And, you know, for Joe and I especially, our favorite dates are going on hikes, walks in nature, that sort of thing. And yeah, he's wonderful because while I'm out running and doing my marathons, he looks for snakes and he looks for animals. So he's always, there's an app called iNaturalist where he looks up where animal sightings have been, and he'll go and he'll look under rocks and he'll forage around in forests and he'll be looking for things. And that's what his inner child wants him to do, because when he was a little boy, and if you listen to our episode together, he'll tell you, when he was like 4 or 5 years old, he was already looking for snakes. He was already looking for animals out in the wilderness. So I think it's really beautiful that on this trip, our inner children were both together sort of, I don't know, doing their things and just exploring the world. And there's a certain innocence in my life now that I think when I look back to the way I used to behave when I was going out every night, you know, with people I didn't know, with connections that weren't real, because when you're drinking and you just have drinking friends, are those connections really real, if you're being honest with yourself? I didn't really know myself, know what I wanted. I just knew that I loved the numbness of loud music and alcohol and staying out for days. And I think part of being alcohol free has been really connecting with myself again, connecting with other people in their true forms as well, and being able to be brave enough to feel things and put myself into the world and say, this is me unfiltered, unclouded, and this is what I love. And it feels fucking amazing. Like, it feels so beautiful to have this like clarity of my life, and to also have a partner who is very in touch with himself and his inner child. And then, you know, our inner children are doing the same things together. Actually, funny story, there used to be a zoo in West London called Zion House Tropical Zoo, and I figured this out like maybe a month ago, but Joe used to work with the snakes there, the venomous reptiles, whatever, and they used to do shows for school children who would come in to Zion and look at the snakes. And he, when he was like 12 and I must have been 8 or maybe younger, I can't work out the exact age because I went to Scotland for a while. Anyway, when he was young and I was young, he put a snake around my neck. How crazy is that? So we met before we met now. And that's a theory that's called invisible string. I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but it's this theory that when you meet someone, they kind of follow you throughout your life and you're always sort of tethered. And I think it's really beautiful that, because Joe has had a very similar journey to mine in becoming alcohol free. And what's really wonderful is that we met as children and then sort of went away on our own journeys of self-discovery with a lot of angst and a lot of substance abuse. And then came back together when we were older in this, like, even though we're both in our 30s, this almost like innocent joy together. And being alcohol free and living the way that I do now is the most fun I have ever had, which is mental, because a lot of people, I think, rely on or are very attached to the image or feeling that partying and being fun and being drunk and all of that stuff, that's that feeling that that gives you. You're almost scared to lose it because you think your life won't be fun without it. But let me tell you, it's much more fun to have a regulated nervous system than it is to be feeling pretty crappy every morning. Again, though, like I always say, alcohol's not the problem, I'm the problem. So please don't take offense to this. If you still drink, it's amazing. So most of my friends and family do. That's great. But I just think it's lovely to hold space for people who are sober curious, because I think I was sober curious for 2 years before I actually took the plunge. Like I can say I'm alcohol free now, but it took my 30th Christmas and New Year's Eve sober, my first ones, for me to actually be like, right, I can do this, because I'm way more fun without alcohol. But for people who are sober curious, you know, I think it's such a nice thing to talk about and give people a space where, you know, life can be really fun and exciting, and you can take risks still, you can be risky, you can feel sexy, you can do all of these things, you know, without it. And the experiences that I've had in my sober life, the people that I've met in the last year, the races that I've done, the places that I've been, have been the most exciting. So if you are someone who is sober curious, because I think a lot of people might not know, but they see me going from like party animal to sober, trail running, hippie in the woods, when actually there was a huge part of my whole journey, which actually I think I should probably get into a little bit more in the podcast and teach you guys a little bit about the nitty-gritty of plateaus and actually some training aims. And anyway, but I was sober curious for a long time, meaning that I wasn't fully sober. And I think this is a really good thing to talk about, because a lot of people think that you just go sober one day, you're in AA and you have your chips, and then, you know, hey presto, you're 1 year sober. But it doesn't really work like that. In all honesty, it took me a year of thinking about it, of kind of having that seed of thought, to actually living now without it, because there is no way in hell that I would have been able to adjust my lifestyle to being completely alcohol free at that time. Because my social circles, my fun, and my life was centered around the pub. And that's not a bad thing, by the way. The pub is an amazing way to be social. It's a great way to gather friends. You know, that's what all my mates were doing. So if I had just completely withdrawn from that, I would have lost all of my friends. I would have lost all my comfort. Like, you can't just go black and white, unless, of course, it's a medical thing and your doctor has told you, please take the medical advice. But this is just me telling my own story. It was a really slow, slow journey, an inkling in my brain telling me, is there more than this? Is it the alcohol? Like, are you really anxious every morning, or is it the alcohol? Do you not recognize the features in your face, or is it the alcohol? Are you unable to keep a relationship, or is it the alcohol? So these were questions I was asking myself, and I kept ignoring it and I kept drinking, because it's easier, right, than to face up to the feelings. But when lockdown 2 happened in the UK, it gave me a kind of pause and a bit of light relief, because the pubs closed. And this was the first time that I actually quantified how much I was drinking. And if I could give you some practical tips from my own journey, if you are sober curious and you want to maybe, you know, think about what would my life be like without alcohol, doesn't need to be forever. I have so many mates who have done a month without, a year without, they challenge themselves to 6 months without. Sometimes it's about, you know, not seeing it as this black and white, sober, drunk. It can just be, I'm going to lay off the sauce for a month and see if I can improve my running, see if there are other areas of my life that, you know, I could really, really lean into with this extra energy. So the first thing I did was I took a week off booze, which was a big wake up call, because I didn't realize actually just how much I relied on it for enjoyment, for habitual, just, you know, things I did throughout my day. In the evening, every evening I would have a gin and tonic at 5 p.m. and then I'd have, you know, wine all night until go to bed. That was something that I just did as a hobby. And breaking that was really difficult at first, but I did a week, because I knew that if I had set in my mind, you've got to do 6 months or a year, I'd freak out, man. Like, so I said, right, we'll do 7 days. And I replaced the gin and tonic with a cup of tea and a biscuit and a chat with my mate. I think I was still smoking cigarettes at this time, which is probably a whole, I know actually it's a big request, people asking me to talk about quitting smoking, and I'll get into that maybe in next week's episode. But I would have a tea and a cigarette, probably bad to admit this, but anyway, whatever, it's fine. I don't smoke now. And that replaced the gin and tonic. And then I had like alcohol-free wines. I had like Diet Coke, juices, squashes, anything to replace the habit of drinking that. You've got to fill that habit in with something else. So I did a week without. And by day three, I felt absolutely amazing. I woke up on day three with this euphoric feeling I hadn't felt in like 10 years. And I just had this like head that was free of these buzzy little bees that would go on in my mind, like these anxious little thoughts that were swirling around. Woke up that morning, I had started running. So I went out on my run, best run I'd ever done. My heart rate felt really, really nice. It felt like I could control my breathing. I started to see differences in my face by day five. All of the inflammation had started to go down. I was starting to recognize my nose again. I was laughing again with my parents when I saw them. Like I was getting back to that sort of like jovial self without the booze blanket. And then by day seven, I already knew I wanted to extend it to a month. So I didn't put the pressure on myself to do six. I just did a week and then I did a month. And then the pubs opened again, like, took a few steps backwards, but that's normal. We did that. It happens to everyone. Everyone takes steps backwards. I think when you are on this journey of like alcohol free, if you make alcohol the devil, it almost becomes harder. So knowing that, you know, maybe I could just do a day, I could do a week, I'll make it a challenge. I'll ask my dad to do it with me. I'll ask my mates to do it with me. And then slowly, slowly, you know, it's been a long journey, but I would say I've only in the last 3 months have I become actually confident and instead of pretending without alcohol. And I kind of had a period where I would say no to going out to bars and clubs because I just didn't want to be around that environment so much. But that was fine. And now I feel comfortable to go out again without it. And I'm able to go have my Red Bull, be my ridiculous self, who I've always been, but it was just sort of, I think a lot of the liquid courage, I became reliant on it. And now, you know, I mean, it's so crazy. Like I went on a podcast the other week with a woman, well, a girl, Lucy Davis, you probably all know her. But when she was running a 100K ultra marathon, I was in, just come out of lockdown at the beginning of my, you know, running journey, looking up to her. And I was asked on her podcast the other week, crazy. But to have the courage to do that sober for me is wild. That whole experience was wild. But just reflecting back on that journey and seeing it as something that's not, you know, completely linear or black and white, and allowing it to be a bit of like, oh my God, okay, like I know I'm going out to my mate's birthday. Can I do a drink budget instead of being completely alcohol free? Like, would I maybe just say, cool, usually you'd have a free for all and it's 10 drinks. What if I just had one? You know, what if I just had a glass of Prosecco? You know, I used to set drinks budgets for myself. I do the weeks of sobriety. And then I was so gentle with myself. I think that's what really worked, is that I didn't chastise myself when I made a mistake, fell off the wagon, had a bad night out, whatever it was. I just knew that with each day I had a new chance. So challenges really helped. Having a drinks budget really helped. But just slowly, slowly, slowly getting to the place where I was starting to recognize myself again without it, to the point where I knew that I could be completely alcohol free and have the confidence to live like that. But it's taken 4 years, so it takes a long time. And of course, there are people who decide, right, that is it, tomorrow, that's it, I'm done. I'm pouring the alcohol down the sink. And, you know, that is amazing and works so well for so many people. I just knew if I set parameters for myself like that, I would rebel, or I'd get scared or overwhelmed. Same thing with my weight loss journey, you know, knowing I wanted to lose 100 pounds. I didn't say that ever. I said I wanted to lose a pound a week, you know, a pound, one day sober, 1 week sober, whatever. Just bite size, day by day by day, it adds up. And then you'll look back and, you know, now I'm just alcohol free at parties and no one would ever know. And I still tell, you know, I think actually it was the first time I'd said out loud to someone the other day that I didn't drink in a bar in Camden. And they were like, oh, okay. Anyway, I was like, all right, it's not a big deal. Cool. So give it a go. You know, if you're listening and you are curious, why don't you try 7 days from now? And then next week you can come back and tell me how it went and see how you got on. But just bite-sized pieces. Make it friendly, make it manageable. Just knowing that every day the habits that you make are going to add up to this like wonderful life. And that every day, every morning, every sunrise, there's a new hope, there's a new chance to try again. But what a trip. And I hope everyone gets to experience something like that in their lifetime. And it might not be running through Zion. It might be, I don't know, having your flowers win at a gardening show or submitting a final draft of a book to a publisher's, whatever it is, that big moment for yourself, for your soul, for your inner child, something you've always wanted. I hope everyone gets to experience that. But that adventure starts in the little things you do every day, the little things you do every morning, how you speak to yourself, and all the things we cover in this podcast. So I hope that gives you a little bit of hope for a new day. I'm happy to be home. I'm happy to be back, and I'm excited for the next challenge of Paris Marathon. And I'm going to leave you with a poem again from Anam Cara. It's a lovely, lovely poem. It's called For Josie, and it is by the author of this book, John O'Donohue. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the grey window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colours, indigo red, green and azure blue, come to awaken in you the meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the curragh of thought and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life. Wonderful. So yeah, some well wishes from ancient Celts from me to you. I hope these words do wind around you, and I hope they do give you an invisible cloak to mind your life. Just, I thought that ending was very suitable for Nine Lives. So thank you for listening, everybody. Next week I'll be back in the studio, but I thought I'd just have a little bit of a cozy, chatty episode this week. Loads and loads of love, and I will speak to you soon.